Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to another video and podcast from fantasyfootballscout.co.uk. My name is David and today I am joined by Tom, or rather, Tom should rather say he's joined by me, because of course I'm filling in for Joe, the usual host of Goals Imminent, and we're here to discuss the players that haven't been scoring as many goals as they should do, but probably will start firing in the back of the net this week. That's the theory, isn't it, Tom? And it's good to have you here, and good to be on this video, to be honest. I've always enjoyed doing Goals Imminent. It's been a while, so how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, David. Yeah, looking forward to game week four already. We've got, obviously starts on Friday. We've got an international break after. So lots to think about. Ideally want to be going into that break with a green arrow. So yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, and lots of people in the chat also looking forward to things as well. We've got one of your mates in the chat, Tom, Aston Villa Bozzy, who said, good to see Neto with an assist. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about last week and what was predicted. So it's the goals imminent table continues to be in fine fettle. We've got SoCan1 in the chat as well, FPL Marshall, David Orr, who says, good day from Angestralia, which I'm guessing is some kind of Postecoglou reference. So it's good to have some more Aussies. Whenever the Aussies watch our content, they are watching it from a quite ludicrous time of day, no matter what time it's on, because we don't do any content for you guys that's at a reasonable hour. So it's always good to have you in the chat, and Josh here as well. We've got lots of Villa questions, which probably makes a lot of sense. We probably are going to talk about Watkins today. It's a good job we do have a Villa fan in the house, Tom.
Yeah, although I don't own Watkins, and I think you benefited from a couple of Villa players this week, didn't you, David, with Cash and, did you have Diaby too?
Yeah, I had Cash and Diaby, so yeah. I mean, I'm trying to keep it quiet because I do my own team reveal video anyway, so on all the other videos I'm doing, it's all sort of part of the structure to talk about, oh, and my team this week, and I just feel really bad because I think I'm having to mention it loads. So I'm going to say that now, that's a disclaimer, so that when I do mention it later, you at least know I feel bad about it, rather than just trying to gloat the whole time. But you know, Villa are in my good books right now. I'm very, very happy with them. And so yeah, to everybody in the chat, if you've got any questions, we usually have a bit of Q&A at the end, of course, and if you want to send questions in as we're chatting and going through some of the tables, then do so. We'll do our best to get to as many of the questions as we can, but as is the usual sort of YouTube way of things, if you want a definite categorical definite answer to your question, then send in a super chat and you'll definitely get an answer, and then other ones we'll just do our best. Before we jump into things, just a couple of other bits of housekeeping. First things first, of course, is a lot of this information is going to come to you from the Fantasy Football Scout members area, and so that if you've not sorted out your membership for the start of game week four, it's not too late. You can still save up to 30% on those preseason prices and you'll be able to access the goals imminent table in real time, and you don't have to listen to people like me talk about it. That's the main benefit. And we've also got a word from our sponsor as well. This week's video is sponsored by Betway, the principal partners of West Ham and betting partner of Brighton. On Friday, they announced their Heroes of the Weekend. Bet £10 on Player Market's top scorer of the Heroes, and they will credit a £1 free bet for every point up to £20. Betway are also running giveaways, including shirts and tickets for West Ham and Brighton. We know that not everybody gambles, which is something we take very seriously, which is why on our website, we have a filter you can turn on, which allows you to opt out of gambling ads. For those who do enjoy it responsibly and safely. You of course have to be 18 or over to play, and we encourage absolutely everybody to gamble responsibly and to be gambleaware.org. When the fun stops, stop. But speaking of fun, it's not stopping when it comes to the goals imminent table, right, Tom? Because once again, more success. We had Jackson getting a goal last week, and I think Fernandez as well.
Yeah, I haven't got the tables in front of me, but Jackson and Fernandez off goals imminent scored. I think there was a bit of crossover. Gross was on the one table and then he got the goal as well. on assists a minute. Gibbs White did really well. He got a couple of assists at Old Trafford, and Neto as well. You know, we were chatting quite a bit about Wolves last week, and quite a few players were appearing on the tables. They've been taking a lot of shots, and look, I don't think it was a vintage attacking performance at Goodison Park, but Neto, he got the assist late on. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see if those Wolves players continue on the next tables, which I think they probably will, but let's see.
Yeah, but they very much are still heavily popular in the goals imminent table. And just to clarify for anyone who's not aware just how the goals imminent table works, I mean, first things first, we of course have to give massive credit to the usual host of this show, being Joe, who probably doesn't give himself enough credit for this because he's a very humble man. This table has been propping up a lot of FPL teams for a number of years now. It's an automated one, so it sort of populates itself based on the data that's happening in real time in Premier League games. So you need a minimum of 10 goal attempts with a maximum of one goal and 0.5 XGNP min for the last four matches. Has to be matches rather than game weeks, as an just in case, you know, you get some blanks involved as well. Ahead of game week four, this does focus on a minimum of five goal attempts instead of minimum of 10. So it is going to shift when we move into the game week five. But in effect, what it encapsulates is players who aren't necessarily scoring too many goals, but they probably should have been based on the number of shots that they've been having. So what we can see on the table so far, let's stick with Wolves. You know, let's be countercultural. I'm sure there's lots of people out there talking about your Jacksons and your Watkins, and we will get to them. But we've got Mateus Cunha, we've got Pedro Neto and Fabio Silva all still on the goals imminent table heading into game week four. So probably on the fringe of people's radars, but their fixtures get quite good around game week six or seven, I think. So it's worth knowing this stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, well, they've got Palace coming up, haven't they? And then they've got Liverpool, but I think they play Luton after that. The fixtures are a bit of a mixed bag for Wolves, and it's hard to get, I said last week, it's hard to get too excited about their attackers. They've obviously got Gary O'Neill, who's gone in, and he's, I think he's trying to get them to be a little bit more front foot. They've been taking a lot of shots. It hasn't quite translated into goals yet, but the fact that, you know, they've got a lot of players appearing on these tables, so immediately take note. I think Neto is my favourite player, who was, of course, a massive bandwagon last season in pre-season, and it didn't take off for various reasons, and he got injured again. He's the player I think I like the most out of those three, but he's very hard to fit in. There's a lot of midfielders around at the moment, isn't there? So you're probably looking at, if at anybody, at Cunha. But again, I don't know what you think, David, but I would certainly say there's probably two or three forwards around about that price point which are a bit further ahead at the moment.
Yeah, I think so. And yeah, I think Wolves are going to be one of these teams where, as you say, their fixtures are a bit bitty. It's sort of like decent here, not so good there. So it's Palace away next, which I actually don't think is actually that much of a favourable fixture, because I think Palace are better than most of the tickers kind of give them credit for. Liverpool at home is not a nice one either. Luton away, that could be maybe when you maybe would think about it. But then it's City at home. Then Villa at home, of course, as Tom can attest to, you know, a strong European side there. Then Bournemouth away, game week nine. So it's maybe a wild card thing. Game week nine is when people are really thinking about it, to be honest. That might be the time to do it. And just for the benefit of the podcast listeners, I will go through some of the numbers then. So Mateus Cunha, he's had five shots in the box. He's started all three games, two shots on target, no goals. Neto, no goals as well. He's had six shots in the box and just two on target. And then Fabio Silva, just the two starts, five shots in the box, three on target, no goals. So none of them have scored yet. And it's worth saying that clearly the issue actually is kind of accuracy. Sometimes the players who graduate from this table, because this is a place you don't want to be for long, are the ones that are having lots of shots in the box. The shots are on target, and maybe they're just being unfortunate in the quality of the goalkeeper, or maybe they're just snatching at them so they can't quite push it into the top bins instead of to the top glove of the goalkeeper. We probably need some better accuracy from the Wolves guys before we really start considering them in the same breath as some of the other names we're going to talk about in a minute.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. You do have people who have watched this show for a while will know that you have those players that keep popping up every single week. And then you have to start asking questions. You know, a player like Darwin Núñez was on this table a lot last year. Funnily enough, he you know, he was brilliant at the weekend and scored a couple of cracking goals. But yeah, if we might see Wolves player pop up and on these tables quite a bit. And then you really need to kind of delve into the numbers and start asking why that might be. But yeah, I mean, aside from Wolves, there's other players on this list which are really appealing and perhaps have some better fixtures to boot as well.
Hmm. Well, that seems like a decent segue to talk about Chelsea, because their fixtures are continuing to look very, very nice over the next six games. Mm. They're second highest on the season ticket for overall fixture difficulty. Forest at home, Bournemouth away, Villa at home, Fulham away, Burnley away, and then Arsenal at home, which... it's not necessarily as bad a fixture for attacking returns as maybe some suspect, because Arsenal don't necessarily always keep too many clean sheets. And on the goals imminent table right now, we've got Enzo Fernandez, five shots in the box, one shot on target, no goals. So he needs to do some work with his accuracy. But with Jackson, all about volume here. He's got one goal in his last three. That, of course, that came against Luton. 10 shots in the box, which is more than anybody on goals imminent table heading into game week four. Five shots on target, which, of course, is a sort of 50% accuracy there. But at the same time, he is also higher than anybody else on the goals imminent table for those shots on target. So it's really all about the volume with him. We've seen many players in the past, if they're shooting lots and having a proportionate number of shots on target as well, they're someone to really go for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as an owner, it was more relief when he scored in the second half on Friday. He had had a really poor first half. His first touch was off, but looked like a different player in the second half. He held the ball up really well. He created a few chances. You know, I think came out with 7 points, but he was actually unlucky not to hit double figures, because I think it was Chilwell first and then Sterling missed decent opportunities from his passes. But he got the goal he deserved. We flagged him up on the table the week before. We thought, you know, he's getting that many opportunities that a goal was coming, and it did. I think I'm right in saying he's had all of his big chances in his home matches so far, which bodes well for this weekend when he's got Forest at home, aside that Forest, I think, have improved this year, but they tend to concede quite a few goals away from home. They normally concede two or more. So I think if you own Jackson, you're in a really nice place now for this, what, five really good fixtures coming up for him.
Yeah, you made a good point on the big chances as well, because if you compare the goals imminent people this week, he's also top for that particular stat as well. So there's not really a whole lot wrong here. His XG delta at the moment is just -1.04, which, you know, just goes to show he's not hit his stride yet. And there's a good comment in the chat from Artie Whitby, says Jackson scored and he's still underperforming, which suggests that he could, you know, have got a brace in that particular game. There's definitely more to come from him in the future. And it's nice to see him here. What we've seen people come to the Premier League from elsewhere before, spend a bit of time here. I know Werner was on here for a while. But again, it's just, there were just subtle little bits and bobs that showed you, okay, he's got work to do here. We just got none of that with Jackson. It's all clear signs that this is a guy who can do very well in the next couple of weeks. While we're on the subject of Chelsea, I mean, Enzo Fernandez has been involved in the penalties, I think. He is underperforming against his XG of -1.25. I think there's a missed penalty in that.
Correct, yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, but at 5 million, you know, it's not an awful price. But, you know, he's here as well, probably in a different breath to Jackson, though.
Yeah, although he has been playing a bit more advanced. You always kind of think of Enzo as this deeper lying midfielder, but he played the 10 role on Friday against Luton. He has a share of set plays. I think he took six corners. I think Chilwell was on the couple, but he's got the monopoly on set pieces there. And so if he continues playing in behind the striker in that role at 5 million, he's probably going to do well. I think longer term, I don't think that's his position in the team. I think once Nkunku comes back, he'll be the one to take that spot. But for now, if he's got Casado and he's got Gallagher behind him, he's obviously going to be able to roam forward quite a bit. So I don't actually dislike him for this immediate run of fixtures. If you can't reach Sterling, who's, I think, 7.1 now, Enzo might not be a bad alternative.
Yeah, certainly. And then, of course, with penalties as well, always helps. I was going to take us to Villa next, but there's a couple of people talking about Eze. So while I remember, because I want to read out these comments, let's talk about Eze, because Pratik says, is Eze worth the money? He seems to be dreadfully unlucky. Well, dreadfully unlucky, that's just bread and butter goals imminent stuff right there. And then we've also got Alex, who says Eze is the one to bring in over Maddison this week. So interesting claim there. I'm not sure I completely agree with that exact comparison. I think I would rather have Maddison than Eze. But the goals imminent table demonstrates the story of Eze's season so far, doesn't it? 16 goal attempts, 7 in the box. So 16 goal attempts is the most of any player on goals imminent. 7 in the box is the third highest. He's behind only Rashford and Jackson. Now, the issue, of course, is just the 2 shots on target. That's actually terrible accuracy right there. Underperforming his XG by -1.12. 0 goals so far. But as Pratik says, unlucky, right?
Yeah, I think that the big chances column is probably the most interesting with Eze. Yes, he's taken 16 shots, but none of them have been what I would call clear-cut chances. But I still like Eze a lot. I think he has been a bit unfortunate because he's a massive creator in that team too. But maybe they're feeling the effects of key players being out there with Olise and Zaha not there as well. I think if you own Eze, as frustrating as it's been because similarly priced players like Mbeumo have been performing, I still think he's a hold because they've got 3 really nice fixtures in the next, home fixtures in the next 5. I think, what is it? Let me just have a look. It's Wolves, Fulham and Forest. So trickier away games, but 3 good home fixtures in the next 5. I would be tempted to stick with him. He might be on penalties too. That's if owners haven't lost faith already, because 3 blanks in a row is pretty hard to take when, like I say, so many others around that price point to deliver him.
I think if I had him, I'd definitely hold him because there's enough to like about him. I don't have him, so my current situation with him is to look to the future. And I think where he becomes the most compelling is around game week 11, when you get Burnley away, Everton at home, Luton away, West Ham away, Bournemouth at home, and then of course it goes Liverpool, City, Brighton. So you know, I'm looking at maybe a 5-week long dalliance with him rather than building my team around him. But you know, I mean, we could be saying something completely different if in the next couple of weeks. What we need from Eze is we need some of these stats on this table to continue. We want to see that continual volume of shots. But what we need to see is, as you say, a slight uptick in the quality and the accuracy as well. And we know he can do it. We've seen him do that at the end of last season. I think, again, what this table always demonstrates is these are people that are blanking at the moment for the most part, but it's not for the lack of trying. And I'd much rather have a player in my team who's blanking but not for the lack of trying, than someone who's blanking and is making no impact on any of the stats at all. So, but it is a tricky place to be in because, as you say, there's a lot of midfielders that they are trying and they are returning. So, yeah, it's definitely worth having that little chat about Eze, to be honest. But let's bring this to the subject where there's nobody else in the fantasy world I trust more to talk about Aston Villa than yourself, Tom. So we might as well jump in now because we've got so many people asking about this. Artie Whitby saying, I'm unlucky, I've got Watkins, feels bad having Watkins at the moment. We've got, just see if I can find some more. There was loads of them, I can't find them now. Effectively, everyone's like, needs an opinion on Watkins because of the likes of Jackson doing what he's been doing and the fixtures as they've gone as well. They are nicer for Chelsea. What do you do with Watkins? I'll just go through the stats and then, yeah. So 3 starts, 7 shots in the box. That's the joint third best on goals imminent. 3 shots on target, 4 big chances. So he's performing really well compared to the other guys. No goals yet. Underperforming his XG by -1.57. But I think has got an assist in every game so far. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, he's ticking along. He's got 3 assists in 3. 5 points in each of them. But I think if you're an owner, you want to see goals, don't you? And that hasn't happened so far. But he's been getting chances. He's been thwarted by some good goalkeeping at Burnley and against Everton in the match before that when Pickford made a decent save. I think if you look at the beyond this season, I think he's only got 1 goal in his last 10 Premier League matches. But I'm not seeing anything in the performances to suggest that is for anything else apart from that he's just been a bit unlucky. The system is largely the same. I know Diaby's come in. We've gone to this kind of three in the back in possession kind of idea, but he's still the focal point of that attack. He's still getting chances. He's still racking up XG, as you can see. And okay, he's lost penalties. Douglas Luiz has taken over. He was never very good at them in the first place, but it is still a bit of a blow losing penalties. I don't care if he's that good. I would rather my striker be on pens. But still, I think he's a really good forward to hold. He's going to Anfield this weekend. Liverpool will be without Van Dijk, who's suspended. So I think that could be a better fixture than what the ticker makes out. You know, it's a dark red on there, but in reality, I think that, you know, I think we can go to Anfield and score one or two. I think maybe people have seen Diaby come in. He's obviously made a real impact. He's cheaper. But I think Watkins is a fine hold if you want to. But I completely understand now if you would make the move to Jackson, just looking at those next kind of four fixtures. Villa have got Liverpool, Palace, Chelsea and Brighton. And Chelsea have got Forest, Bournemouth, Villa and Fulham. So I think that it depends what type of manager you are, doesn't it? But if you're going to play the fixtures, then I think Jackson's probably the one to have. But there's absolutely nothing wrong with holding Watkins if you've got other fires to put out.
Yeah, I think so. And alternatively, people could switch to Sterling in midfield if they wanted to, so that they could hold on to Watkins if maybe they're looking at a Rashford or a Martinelli or something. You know, they're players that are on people's chopping blocks at the moment. Salah is another one, to be honest. So there's a possible route there. A couple of other things in the chat, actually. Aston Villa Bozzy, your mate from the beginning, has pointed out, of course, that Watkins does have a Premier League hat-trick against Liverpool to his name, and that was a game where they even actually had Van Dijk on the pitch. So
And he scored a hat. He scored a hat trick in Europe last week. You know, it's not like he's not scoring this year. He has scored in Europe as well. So, and of course, it's always nice to be reminded of the hat trick against Liverpool. So, I think he's an absolutely fine hold. I get why people. I think a lot of people made the Watkins to Jackson move last week. But if you still want to do it to capitalise, if you like what you see of Jackson in the second half, do it. But Watkins is fine to hold too. And he hasn't blanked yet. You know, okay, it's only been three assists, but he'll continue ticking along nicely.
Yeah, it does definitely come down to what the specifics of each team are, to be honest, because Jackson does outperform Watkins statistically over the first three. So 10 shots in the box to Watkins 7, 5 big chances to Watkins 4, 5 shots on target to Watkins 3. XGI is 2.28, Watkins is 1.73. So it's just how much is a transfer worth to your team to do that? To be perfectly honest, if I could have it any which way I wanted, I'd actually probably want to have Watkins and Jackson. I suppose Diaby is in the conversation as well. So anyone who doesn't have either and feels like they need to get one of them. The interesting thing is, and I'm saying this as a Diaby owner, I'm not trying to put people off getting Diaby to help him stay a differential or whatever. But the interesting thing is also that despite the fact that Diaby has 7 more points than Watkins, Watkins still actually is statistically outperforming Diaby as well. So 16 touches in the box for Watkins and an extra sort of like half an hour of game time because he's more essential to the team to 11 touches in the box for Diaby. Watkins has created 7 chances, Diaby's created 6, and Diaby has 2 assists, I think, so he's got an assist and 2 goals, I should say. Watkins is better for creation, and he's got 3 assists. Shots in the box for Watkins, 7 to Diaby's 6. 4 big chances for Watkins to Diaby's 1. XGI, 1.73 to Diaby's 1.16. It's just that the goal conversion rate at the moment is in Diaby's favour, 25% for him, 0% for Watkins. So there's not even alarm bells ringing in my mind that Watkins isn't necessarily the best Villa player either, because I think they're both going to do well. And the numbers are actually telling us that Watkins should probably, over the course of a standard game, 3-game period, probably outperform Diaby anyway. So I wouldn't be necessarily making rash decisions to make that switch, I guess.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Absolutely, yeah. Diaby is a good option. He's come into the team. He's playing an essential role in behind Watkins. he's getting beyond Watkins sometimes. He's dropping deep. He's getting used to the team, but he's just a quality player. And you can see that against Burnley. He only played for 60 minutes against Everton, but you can see that. But they're both going to be really good options going forward. And again, it's team dependent. I would argue now that there's so many good midfield options, Watkins is perhaps the easier one to hold. But again, it depends on the makeup of your team and what moves you want to make, really. But yeah, both Villa are an exciting team this year. I mean, I'm normally a pessimistic Villa fan, but this year, I was a bit pessimistic after game week one, but we've turned it round and we've put in three good performances since, including Europe. So yeah, it's all looking pretty positive at the moment, and we're scoring lots of goals, which is great to see.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to see Villa meeting at the top table again, to be honest. I really enjoyed the, I think it was sort of like the mid-noughties when, you know, troubling European spots. It was a good team to watch. It's nice to have you back in that sort of conversation, to be honest. So
yeah,
watching on with sort of neutral respect, if that makes sense. Quick shout out to Pratik. I hadn't actually seen your question when he said, apologies if it's already answered, but who would you prefer out of Watkins and Diaby? Well, we already told you without prompting. So great minds think alike there, Pratik. That's good to see. Let's move on now to a different part of the goals imminent table. Let's talk about Manchester United, because we've got Bruno Fernandes, who is still there, and we've got Rashford, who's still there. Again, I mean, we had a couple of points made about Jackson, for example, you know, actually got some returns in game week three, but it's still on the goals imminent table, which shows there's probably more to come. And it's worth talking about United this week because there's a lot of people considering moving on their Man United midfielder, especially in a world where James Maddison has been James Maddisoning to the best of his ability. That seems to be the transfer people are looking at. But Bruno Fernandes, only one goal, admittedly, but five shots in the box, 13 goal attempts in total. So he's second highest for that stat. Five in the box, four on target. So that's joint second most amongst the goals imminent guys. Three big chances as well. One goal, and of course, on penalties, and has really good assist potential, which we'll look at on the next table. Rashford, no goals, eight shots in the box. Of all the people on this table, only Jackson has more than that. Just a three on target. Two big chances, no goals. So that's what people are working with their United assets. Maddison really does force the question, I suppose. What's your thoughts on the United guys?
Yeah, I owned them both, so I was kind of happy that they came in with some points game week three. I'm probably going to keep both. We'll have a look at my team later, but the thing is that Arsenal and Brighton next might not be ideal fixtures, but they go on a really good run after that. Fernandes is bossing the underlying numbers, as you can see there. He's got pens. He's on other set plays. Rashford, I thought, looked a bit better on the left at the weekend. Got a couple of assists. I have no doubt that the goals are coming for him as well. And again, I think it's very much team dependent. I own two Arsenal midfielders as well, and I'm probably looking to sell one of those guys rather than Manchester United, just because of those fixtures from game week six onwards for them, which are really nice. But yeah, if you... Maddison, I admit, is looking great as well at the moment. He's got Burnley and Sheffield United next, so I can understand why there's envious glances in his direction as well, but I think United players are fine to hold the midfielders anyway.
Yeah, I think bearing in mind that we haven't got Martinelli on here, for example, and he's kind of really underperformed for a lot of people, I think if you had Martinelli and one of those two United midfielders, it would be Martinelli who I would be moving on to get to Maddison, to be honest. So if you can, my general view is I want to get Maddison this week. I'm probably going to get rid of Rashford to do it whilst United have some trickier games, and then get one of them, probably get Fernandes in a couple of weeks time, because I actually prefer him anyway, if I'm honest. So that's probably what I'm looking at. That's very sort of very specific to my team. Epi Marshall pointed out, of course, in the chat that, you know, his fixtures do get better after the Arsenal game is out of the way. So it's a luxury move for some people to be able to move a United guy out and then bring another one back in, to be honest, if you can.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Yeah, especially with Brighton as well. You know, we'll touch on their players a bit later on, but their fixtures, you know, a lot of people own Mitoma, for instance. And again, he would be more of a priority sell for me than the United games, the midfielders, sorry. So, yeah, again, we'll keep saying it, but it's so team dependent on who you own. And I think Brighton and Arsenal mids are probably a sell before United at the moment, for me anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's fair enough. I think that's everything we can get out of the goals imminent table. We've had one person ask Neil Mope in a conversation about goals being, quote, imminent. Surely not. Mm-hmm. Well, you're absolutely right, because I don't think we're going to talk about him, are we, Tom?
No, he didn't even get on the pitch at the weekend, did he? I think no. Danjuma led the line and Dobbin was kind of out a bit wider, and they turned to the new striker who they've just signed ahead of Maupay. So, yeah, it won't be long before he's off this table and we don't even have to devote a minute to him. So, yeah, he's not an option.
There's only one Neil I want to talk about on a Fantasy Football Scout video, and it's not the one who plays for Everton. It's the one who runs the editorial team at Fantasy Football Scout. He's the one I want to talk about. We're going to move on to the assist imminent table now, but yeah, thank you to everybody who's watching live, up to about 330 people watching live now. But it's worth pointing out, only 54 of you have liked it. So come on, guys. I mean, let's throw Joe some holiday love. He's on his annual leave. Let's have him come back and see all those likes in his name, you know, giving him a nice holiday gift. So get that like counter up as we move into the assists imminent table. Some really interesting names jump out here, to be honest. Let's briefly segue using Man United, because of course Fernandez also on this table as well. 4 successful crosses, 11 corners, 10 chances created. Only one player on this table has more key passes in the first 3 matches than him, but he's underperforming his XA, his expected assist, by minus 0.82. Just I think it's just the one assist so far. Obviously, the finishing at United maybe needs a little bit of work, and maybe that's what he needs to bump that up. But it just further confirmation that Fernandez actually is in pretty good statistical place.
Yeah, absolutely. And Hoyland, we think he's getting close now to coming back. And that's been the problem for Fernandes for the whole of Ten Hag's reign, really, at Man United, going through to the beginning of last season. You know, he underperformed his expected assists because he's creating the chances, but they just haven't got a clinical finisher up top. You know, it's Weghorst for a lot of last year and Martial coming in, but then can't keep fit. This year, they've been using Rashford at top, and then Martial again, and Sancho's had a couple of runouts in that position. But yeah, if they can get Hoyland in and they can get him, you know, converting those chances, I mean, I find it really difficult to choose between Fernandes and Rashford. But if you're just going on underlying data at the moment, he's undoubtedly the better option.
Yeah, I mean, save you 0.5. And of course, it seems to have a wider spread of points potential to draw from.
Yeah.
You know, because the penalties in a way offset against Rashford being a bigger goal threat from open play, because United do get a fair amount of penalties with the tricky nature of their attacking players. And yeah, the assist potential, as you mentioned, is sort of largely incomparable, at least at United. We'll stay with the red teams that we've all got lots of midfielders from, because the thing that jumps out to me most here, to be honest, is Saka. Now, in my mind, I'd got it in my head, especially from the way that he finished last season, and to some extent from what I'd seen of him so far, clearly my eye test was wrong. I saw Saka as penalty boy only, you know, and I'd felt like in open play maybe some of the other guys were offering a little bit more. What I completely had missed until researching this video is actually he's the most creative Arsenal player so far. You know, 9 key passes, which is more than any Arsenal player. It's in the top 5 for all players in the first 3. 2 big chances created as well. He's joint second in the Premier League for that stat. So again, he is the best Arsenal creator so far. If you're, you know, he's obviously got some goals already, but he could be adding assists anytime soon if they can just finish their dinner. So nobody has underperformed their XA delta on the assist imminent table by a larger delta than Saka, so minus 1.36.
Yeah, I had a little wobble with Saka after the Selhurst Park penalty when Odegaard stepped up, and I suddenly started thinking, well, look, if Saka isn't on penalties, he was actually outperformed by Odegaard and Martinelli last year when you remove penalties from the equation. So it got me thinking, you know, is he the best use of money? But then the comments from Arteta after suggested that he didn't know that much about the penalty. And then, of course, he stepped up at the weekend. So now we think he's suddenly back on penalties. He's obviously creating a lot. And suddenly now I think, you know, once we think he's got penalties, he's the best Arsenal midfielder to own. We thought he was underpriced at the beginning of the season. I think he still probably is a bit now. And, yeah, they just need to become... Like United, just a little bit more clinical in front of goal, whether that's Nketiah or whether that's Jesus coming back into the fold, or you know, Havertz, who also appears on this list a bit further down. You know, his prospects have dropped a lot, haven't they? I mean, he was withdrawn, what was it, on 56 minutes at the weekend, I think. He's dropped in price. Fabio Vieira came in and did really well. So yeah, Havertz not an option now, I don't think, but Saka certainly is, and he's just one of those options for me now. I think he's just a bit of a set and forget, and just leave him there, and he'll just keep on doing the business.
Yeah, wobble is absolutely the right word to use, because he was sort of mildly on the chopping block for me after that as well. But as you say, it does seem like we don't need to be as worried as we thought we needed to be, and in a way, arguably the Arsenal answer to Bruno Fernandes, in the sense that, you know, he's got penalties and he's also the best creator. So yeah, as you say, I think he's just got to stay there, especially with the fixtures that Arsenal have coming up. Also at the top end of this table is, now I feel like a bit of a broken record here, and people might remember me making these comments in the preseason about Pascal Gross, because he famously last season outscored FPL points wise Mitoma, March and McAllister, but of the four highest scoring Brighton midfielders, was the only one of those four not to get nominated for the Fantasy Football Scout Team of the Year, probably because he just kept ticking along and he was a little bit under the radar. You know, I think he got some returns against West Ham, so he's not the sort of player who's going to disappear completely. But what we're seeing here is that he's not that far off from, you know, racking up some assists. 15 corners, 14 chances created. That's the most of any player on this assist imminent table. I mean, it's probably the wrong time to be talking about Brighton, because I think a lot of people are looking for a Brighton exit plan, a Brexit, a Brexit, whatever you want to call it, is very much on people's mind at the moment. But they do come back into the equation, I think, around game week 13, when there's a possible opportunity for a wild card. So I've certainly got my eye on Gross. I want to see where this is going to go.
Yeah, I mean, he pops up a lot in these videos that we do, because he's such a good chance creator. From open play and from set plays as well. I mean, last year, yes, he did well for overall points, but I think that Mitoma and Marsh and McAllister, if you broke it down on a kind of points per 90 basis, I think that they I think I'm right in saying that they both exceeded Gross. And he always, I think the fact that he kind of moved to right back quite often as well was really off-putting, although he could still create from there and he was taking set pieces and stuff. I think when you see a midfielder that you own and you see them at right back, even in a fluid system like De Zerbi's, it's pretty off-putting. But I watched a bit of the game on Saturday night against West Ham, and just so much went through Gross now he's back in central midfield. He got the goal. He had five shots. He created six chances in that match alone. So, yeah, nobody's looking at Brighton now. I think everybody who invested at the start of the season probably did it for game weeks 1 to 3. I think you could probably hold it for the Newcastle game if you need to, if you've got other areas. But I think I would be looking to move them on certainly this week, or if not, if you have to, then next week. But, yeah, Gross is interesting. He's always been a good chance creator, even when he was over in Germany before that. And, yeah, maybe we'll have another look at it once the fixtures turn again for Brighton, and we're looking at Mitoma, Marsh and Gross. We might have to have another look at it, but I do feel that it's more assist potential than goal potential with Gross, but that doesn't have to be a kind of a deal breaker there.
And as you say, it's very much dependent on where he's going to end up in that team, because he can end up in places that fantasy managers really don't want to see him. So, you know, the best case scenario is he spends the rest of this season at right back so that he gets classified as a defender next year. And then all of a sudden, that is wishful thinking, almost certainly.
Yeah, he would need to rack up some more minutes at right back than he does in midfield. And I think because they've lost McAllister and they've lost Caicedo, I think De Zerbi actually quite likes Gross being in that midfield. with you know, Gilmore or Dahoud or somebody like that, just because it gives you a bit of familiarity. He knows the system. So certainly in the immediate few games, I see him playing more in central midfield than at right back. But who knows what will happen in the second half of the season.
Yeah, never know. Anyone who wants that shift in the system to happen, find some way to just injure every single right back De Zerbi has access to, and then maybe we'll get the holy grail of Gross as an FPL defender. But as we say, wishful thinking. I think probably the only other name worth pulling out on this particular table before we... Well, I tell you, let's go for two names. We'll briefly come back to Eze, who also happens to be on this table as well. So those of you who are like, oh, what's he got to do to get some returns? Well, not that much more. Nine chances created, so only Fernandez and Gross on the assist per minute table have created more chances than him. 12 corners, so heavily involved in those set pieces, underperforming against his expected assists by -0.63. So it's confirmation again that he's kind of the new Zaha, in the sense that he is the talismanic figure who can get goals and assists at Crystal Palace. He just needs to, yeah, just get some better luck.
Yeah, and just looking at the next three fixtures, which are Wolves, Villa and Fulham, we're going to be looking at a table, I think, a bit later, which is called Whipping Boys. And these next three opponents, I think, feature on that table, perhaps a bit unfairly with Villa, but if we're just looking at the stats from the first three game weeks, so that offers a bit more hope for Eze owners that that he can come good finally.
Yeah, fingers crossed. And then the last name we're going to talk about on expected assists, because there has been a little bit of a chat about West Ham in the chat, about how they could have some good punts for the next few weeks.
Yeah.
We've got Lucas Paqueta on here. Six chances created, one goal for himself, no assists yet so far. Underperforming against his expected assists, 0.61. I suppose, in a way, the reason Ward-Prowse isn't here is because Ward-Prowse can actually deliver on the expected assists. And
yeah,
so Ward-Prowse is what I'm looking at, to be honest.
There's two midfielders ahead of Paqueta, I think, and it's Bowen and it's Ward-Prowse, and both really appealing for game week four. Then they have a couple of really difficult, well, I say really difficult, they play City and then they play Liverpool. Maybe Liverpool isn't quite so bad for a midfielder right now. But then they go, I think they're top of the ticker from game week seven right through until mid-December. They go on a really nice kind of long run, and that might be the time to invest. But maybe people, having seen what Chelsea did to Luton on Friday, maybe they'll be thinking, well, we'll go early on a West Ham midfielder. And I don't dislike that. It could potentially pay off.
It absolutely could do. And yeah, I think, yeah, when those fixtures do turn, it does happen at such a time where I feel like I'm probably going to wildcard, because it's a big swing with lots of other teams whose fixtures improve all at the same time. So that's very much my thinking with West Ham. So yeah, there we are. Let's move on to some whipping boys, as you said. And thank you for everybody who's still with us. We've got about 330 in the chat still, and we've managed to get it up to 82 likes. So you're still about 200 and a bit short of where you should be. If you're watching and you're not liking the stream, we want to know why. Let's move on to the whipping boys. That might get people excited. Of course, whipping boys is an expression we largely use when we're talking about captaincy, of course. But you know, at the same time, it's very, very useful just outside of that to just look at the defences that are being tremendously obliging in the last few matches. There's a number of different ways we can do this, to be honest. I mean, there's total shots conceded. This obviously gives you the story of, you know, who's allowing the most shots. But sometimes you got to think about where those shots are coming. You know, shots in the box obviously is a big tester for that. But big chances as well is another key one to consider. I mean, Brentford last year showed that you can concede lots of shots, but if you manage to have a massive gap between shots conceded and big chances conceded, your goalkeeper's just going to rack up bonus and saves, etc. Flecken obviously has a chance to do that again this season, to be honest. So big chances conceded are the ones that are offering up the most glaring opportunities to score against them, and some interesting names here. So Fulham are worse so far for how often they're giving up big chances in the Premier League. So 14 puts them bottom. Wolves are second worst. And so, as you mentioned, Crystal Palace, Eze is playing them next. So Eze should get something this week. You have to say this is the week when it's surely going to happen. But the interesting thing here is, to be honest, is that level with Wolves for most big chances conceded, level for second most big chances conceded as far as is Brighton, which is very, very surprising. I suppose anybody who's, you know, maybe wants to go early on Newcastle, it might pay off.
Yeah, well, the game on Saturday evening was really interesting because West Ham went to the Amex. I think I'm right in saying they only had 12 shots, but they racked up about 3.5 XG in those games. And there has been a few, I've read a couple of pieces saying that teams are starting to work out how to play against De Zerbi and how to play against Brighton and sit back and kind of soak it up and then hit them quickly on the counter attack. And I still think Brighton have got a decent defence. I'm just going to have a look at how many big chances they actually conceded in that match on Saturday. Yeah, so they conceded six of their big chances in that match against West Ham. So then it's been a six over the other two prior to that. Now, I don't think Brighton are a team that we should really target it for with our attackers against their defenders. But Newcastle will ask questions if they've got, you know, players like Anthony Gordon, Harvey Barnes off the bench, Alexander Isak, players like that. You can see them scoring at the Amex, certainly.
Well, we've had a couple of people actually already asking this question before we came to this table. AEXHD asked, is this Stupinan sellable this week? Foregone conclusion says, do I bench a Stupinan for Rico Henry due to the fixture, even though Newcastle have lost Botman, for example? Couple of other questions earlier on sort of trickling through, and I've seen it talked about this week. What would you do with this Stupinan kind of in light of some of the things we've had a look at here? Well, I say,
yeah,
what
I
would
think
you?
he's.
You've got him, I'm sure. So what are you doing with this stupid man? It's probably a better way of phrasing the question.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's on my bench at the moment, so I'm not forced into the position where I've either got to play him or got to sell him. I can kind of get away with it, but I'm looking at these next six fixtures. And now Brighton did keep clean sheets, I think, at home against Newcastle, Bournemouth, and Liverpool last year, their next three opponents at the Amex. But I wouldn't be expecting that to kind of history to necessarily repeat itself. I think that the only real fixture which you want to be playing a Stupinan in the next six is the Bournemouth at home game. I think you could play him against Newcastle this weekend because there's always a chance of attacking returns for a Stupinan, isn't there? He's one of the most attacking fullbacks in the division. But I completely get if people want to maybe move him for a Man City defender. Newcastle after this week as well. I'm eyeing them up from game week five. I think that I don't think the Botman injury sounds too bad. Keep an eye on that though. But if you could move into somebody like Trippier, if you've got a bit of money in the bank, something like that. So yeah, I don't think you have to sell a Stupinan, but I think that you could do it if you do it without worrying too much about it. Because I don't see huge returns in the next six game weeks.
Yeah, just to put some visualization to what you're talking about in the Newcastle fixtures and indeed the Brighton ones as well. If you sort the season ticker between game weeks 5 and 14 for overall difficulty, Brighton in the bottom four, in actual fact, because, you know, Man United, Villa, Liverpool, Man City, some really tough games for them. Newcastle, by contrast, second highest. Brentford at home in game week 5, which is, you know, maybe a marginal fixture, but having someone in place ready for Sheffield United away, Burnley at home, West Ham away, Crystal Palace at home, Wolves away. Bournemouth away in game week 12, for example, you know, we all need to start thinking about our Newcastle plan. So, yeah, it's definitely worth talking about it. Let's jump into some ultra differentials before we come to our own teams. And so, what I've done here, this is more of a bespoke selection of players who are under. There's a couple that are under 10%. Well, they're all under 10%, and there's two that are over 5%. And then I've picked a couple of others that are under 5% who take my fancy for the next couple of weeks. And some of them we've talked about already, to be honest. I mean, Matty Cash, obviously. We're both big fans of him now. Tom, just purely through locality, and me through the new for numerical reasons, you know, predominantly my FPL score. Of all the players I've selected, he's the one with the highest expected goal involvement so far, 17 points. There's a few people asking questions about him. And again, let's draw on your villain's experience and knowledge here, Tom. It's away against Liverpool next up. So it's kind of, there will be people that will bring him in because he's got the big haul. But do we really think he can do it again against Liverpool is the question.
Well, he played as a winger at Burnley at the weekend. So he's a bit further forward. And I think five of his six shots in the box this season came in that match. And I know a few people were looking at him in pre-season. And there was Emery had actually spoken before the season kicked off and said that, look, Konsa might be used at right back. this year, and then tuck into form a three in possession, which would which made us think, well, is Bailey going to be the right winger then, and Konza's going to be the right right back in certain matches in certain scenarios? But Cash actually replaced Bailey and went further forward at the weekend. And if we know he's going to be playing in that role, he's an absolute no-brainer, because he was a winger when he used to play for Forest. Very attacking. He scored in pre-season as well, playing the same role against Brentford over in the US. I don't think there's any guarantees that he's going to be playing that role every week. I think it might be opposition specific. We've also got Alex Moreno to come back in, and the dynamic might change a little bit because he's very attacking on the left. So I'm not sure if I'll be bringing him in now. I think if you own him, great. I think you've obviously benefited from those points like you have, David. But I think with Liverpool, Palace, Chelsea, Brighton next, I would be tempted to just wait and see on Cash now. See what happens with the system, see how advanced he is. And then in game week 8, when we play Wolves and West Ham, then you could maybe have another look at it then. But it's obviously exciting in playing as a winger. I mean, he got so far forward at the weekend. And it's great when you've got an attacking player, like a defender, in those kind of attacking areas, because Villa are playing well as an attacking unit at the moment, and he's going to get chances if he were to play that role every week.
You make an excellent point that it does seem to be opposition specific, even down to maybe when you start him or when you own him, because there will be people who are fed up with me saying this, but I've had an Aston Villa Crystal Palace defensive rotation in my team pretty much since the day the game launched, and I'm not deviating from that. This week I'm going to start Anderson over Cash, and it's still working, and it continues to. You know, those games where I don't fancy the Villa clean sheet, I'm just going to play Anderson instead. They do link up quite nicely. And I should actually say thank you to Neil. We made this joke on one of our team calls the other day about the fact that Neil kind of talked me out of getting Dina in the early part of the season before he got a big return, I think, in game week 2. I even went as far as to do my Geordie impression of him on a team call to be like, you know, oh, I wouldn't do that.
Well, Dean's got assists in the past two game weeks as well. But there is this kind of ongoing talk that he might be off. He's been linked with Nice, I think, and with Alex Moreno coming back longer term, that's a bit of a risky move. I didn't touch on that just then. People will be saying, well, why would you go for Cash anyway when Villa were on the whipping boys table? But I think Villa had 10 big chances conceded on that table. Now, 9 of them were conceded against Newcastle in game week 1 when we played a suicidal high line. And things have improved since then. So I still think a Villa defender. And I think the rotation thing that you said, David, is really interesting, because when we were leading up to this season, people were saying, oh, why do you need to bother with defensive rotations? The defenders, you know, you can get Gabriel at the time, who was popular, or Saliba now, they're 5 million. You can get a Stupinan for 5 million. There's players like Akanji for 5 million. So, and Botman 4.5 million. Why even bother with defensive rotations? But I still quite like them. And it's why I've got a Palace defender like you, David, in my team, because I can bring them in games 4, 6 and 8 and rotate them with someone else. And I still actually quite like it, despite the defenders from the big teams being underpriced. I think they can complement those players, and you can have you can get access to some quite nice fixtures by doing it.
I think the other thing also is that actually just the higher performing teams, in inverted commas, don't actually offer defensive returns quite as regularly as you would like. I mean, gone are the days when you'd see a Mourinho's Chelsea team get like 23 clean sheets in a season, or you know, like that season where United under Sir Alex Ferguson had Van der Sar in goal, when they kept something like 11 clean sheets on the bounce or something ridiculous. We don't really live in a day and age where that kind of happens anymore, because there is more onus on playing out from the back and sort of more expansive types of high intensity football. You know, Liverpool, another team. I mean, there was a time when you had to have two Liverpool defenders and you had to pay over the odds for them. But actually, playing the fixtures and saving some money and just swapping some defenders in and out is probably going to yield you more points than simply just relying on City from one week to next. That's before we even get started on rotation. So, I suppose in a way, me and you are both preaching to the converted here, because we're both purists. We love a good defensive rotation. It's good to see they're still working. So anyone who's thinking about some of these guys, don't necessarily be put off by those bad fixtures. If you can compare them with someone else who is going to help you out there, then that is going to be very, very useful. And as I said, thank you very much to Neil. because if it wasn't for you, Neil, I would have gone Dini over Cash and we could have been looking at a completely different story. So thank you very much to the Mr. Team News guru there. Who else have we got on the differentials? Well, we haven't talked about this team at all yet and I want to talk about them now. Taiwo Awoniyi at Nottingham Forest. I think he's got 7 goals in 7 games in the Premier League. He hasn't blanked yet this season, if I think I'm right in saying, 2.8% ownership, and everybody just refuses to pay him any attention, despite the fact that he's doing pretty well. And, you know, that will come a time in a couple of weeks' time when Forest fixtures actually get quite good. So, he, crazily enough, Taiwo Awoniyi is on my watch list.
Yeah, he's scored in 7 successive league games, but he's actually scored, I think I'm right, 9 goals in that time because he scored a couple of braces towards the back end of last year, didn't he? Now, we looked at it last year in a digest piece on the site and looking at how many shots he's taken, and it isn't sustainable going off the amount of shots he's taken. I think he had scored all of those goals in something like 7 or 8 shots or something like that. So longer term, you kind of start to think, well, that could be, he's going to need to up that basically. Now, I think he had 3 shots at the weekend, so that's moving in the right direction. And I do think Forrest are getting a bit better of his team. You've got Gibbs White who's creating for them there. Don't know what's going to happen with Brennan Johnson, but they've still got other players who can step in. So he's somebody I'm kind of keeping an eye on. I wouldn't bring him in now, given how fewer shots he's actually taking. But if that level goes up a bit and he's taking 3 or 4 shots a week, or even if it drops a bit below that, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to be having 4 every week, but even like 2 or 3, that would show me a little bit more for when the fixtures turn. But he's the main man there. I think he's probably going to hit double figures this year, isn't he? So, it's 6.5, I think. I don't think he's gone up yet.
6.5. And
nobody's looking at him, are they?
That's the thing. 2.8% ownership. No one is, he's not getting price rises. In a way, he's hidden behind a veil of your João Pedros and your Vissers and, you know, your Jacksons and your Watkins, because he's kind of in a price bracket no one's really thinking about up front. But the thing is the fixtures do get really nice for them at some point. I mean, when I say he's on my radar, he's a wild card candidate for me. Now, game week 9 at the moment is my most likely time I would wild card, although I would quite like to hold on to see if I can do it around that blank game week that comes around with Man City. But, you know, in an ideal world, the fixture swing in game week 9 does look very attractive. At that time, between game weeks 9 and 18, which is effectively the remainder of the first wildcard period, the only team that is ahead of Nottingham Forest for fixture difficulty overall is West Ham, who we've already talked about as well. Another team we could be investing in on wildcards, because they've got Luton at home, Liverpool away, which, as we mentioned already, any team can go to Anfield and score now. I think we know that. Villa at home, West Ham away, Brighton at home. And it's 14 where they get even nicer. Everton at home, Fulham away, Wolves away, Spurs at home, Bournemouth at home. And so, yeah, only West Ham in that massive long run of games can offer a better fixture difficulty. So, and bearing in mind that the structure this year that seems to be affording people the most success does involve having a 5.5 or a 6.5 or a 7 million striker. I mean, I feel like at that stage, I can definitely make room for him. So I think people should definitely be keeping an eye on him, because he's just going to keep scoring, isn't he? And then getting ignored. And they're the kind of type of players we want to benefit from in FPL, the ones that nobody else has.
Yeah, and game week 9 is appealing for a wild card because it's the next international break, isn't it, which precedes that. So again, it gives you a bit more time to tinker. And if he does well, what's he got? Chelsea, Burnley, Man City, Brentford and Palace. If he chips in with another couple of goals, he doesn't necessarily need to be scoring every week. If he scores a couple more, then yeah, I can see him picking up a bit of interest in that Luton game in game week 9 if people are wild carding, because you know, people will be moving off people like Jackson around about that time because Chelsea's fixtures really toughen up. So, yeah, he'll be in the conversation, I think.
Chelsea actually plummet to the bottom of the season ticket for that period. I mean, you need it. Yeah. It's what you do with Chelsea largely factors in, I think, what you do with your wild card. If you're going to wild card early, you need a Chelsea exit plan. Maybe that's Nottingham Forest. Maybe it's West Ham, because, of course, Antonio you could get to from a Jackson. But it is definitely worth knowing that this big run of Chelsea games, it is going to come to an end sometime soon. You need an exit plan. That's either with free transfers or potentially the wild card. So it's worth being considerate of that. We mentioned West Ham there. Another player who's not very well owned, 6.1% ownership, is Bowen. 8 shots in a box, 3 big chances, 5 on target. He's created 4 key passes so far. I mean, again, he's probably a wild card candidate, right? 7 million?
I've always liked Bowen. He's always been one of those ones where the differentials take, you know, we always, when we're doing differentials each week, he's very rarely over 5% owned, and he's a player that is central to West Ham's approach and what they do. And Moyes was making all the right noises saying we're trying to get him in more kind of central attacking positions, that counter-attacking threat that we saw at the weekend. And I really like him as a pick this week. I'm just a bit gutted that City and Liverpool follow him. And so I'm kind of thinking, well, and then they play Newcastle and 8 as well. I'm thinking, is now the right time to move for Bowen? But we saw Sterling from that same position, that kind of right wing role, do a lot of damage against Luton last week. They, of course, play with wing backs, and he managed to kind of take advantage of getting in behind them. And maybe Bowen can do the same on Friday. So, he's definitely somebody which you should be having a look at and considering, I think. And alongside somebody like Ward-Prowse, who has already obviously got that set-piece threat. And West Ham, obviously, so good at, you know, such a good area-based team. They've got a lot of tall players, and they're going to take advantage of those set-pieces as well. So suddenly, from looking at West Ham and thinking, before the season started, they haven't signed a player. They've lost Declan Rice, the captain. They're in trouble. Suddenly now, within 2 or 3 weeks, the team's actually looking quite exciting now, I think. Mm.
Yeah, I'm very happy for West Ham, as people will know. Mm. My dad is a West Ham fan. If you watch General's Orders, you'll know that my dad is rubbish at FPL, but he is a Hammers fan. It's nice to see the Hammers continuing to tick along, even without Declan Rice. So, yeah, what we're going to do now, we're just going to briefly look at how our team's shaping up at the moment. But if you will use that time whilst we're talking through, if you stick your questions in the chat and we'll pick a few ones out for us to answer on specific areas of your team. As ever, the usual YouTube rules apply. We'll try our best to get to as many as we possibly can, but there are 334 of you in the chat. If you definitely want an answer, Super Chat's the way to go. No pressure, of course, but that's just how Super Chat's... how they work, just in case people weren't aware. So, Tom, let's come to your team. At the moment, got how you got on in game week 3 on the screen, 54 points. And then I've also got your bus team hiding in the background, ready to reveal once you've talked us through your most recent exploits in the fantasy world.
Yes, so 54 points. Defence was a massive letdown. Obviously, I tuned into Soccer Saturday, and by about 3:05, I was thinking, what is going on? Onana had lost his clean sheet. Saliba had lost his clean sheet. Chilwell, you know, I know he got 6 points, but again, that felt like a bit of a missed opportunity on Friday night watching the game. You know, he had that really good opening in the second half when he tried to pass to Sterling, I think it was, instead of take the shot on himself. So, and Gusto obviously got 14 points. So, yeah, the back four, like they all underwhelmed with Onana and goal. Ahead of them, I had a bit more success. Saka, Fernandes and Rashford all got returns. Both of the strikers returned, albeit with a penalty miss thrown in for Haaland. Podogi on the bench, not ideal, but I was never really going to play him ahead of any of those defenders. So I don't feel too kind of frustrated with that. And my transfer last week was a thoroughly underwhelming Matt Turner to Areola, the West Ham goalkeeper, which was largely based on this week when you shift to my team. It helps me a bit with my goalkeeper this week. But he actually had a really good game at Brighton, which I was glad, because there's always that worry with him that one bad game and Fabianski could be given a run again. But he played really well then, and I think it's his shirt to lose at the moment. I think... He's definitely impressed. He saved the penalty against Chelsea, obviously. So, an average week, really. But that's fine. It wasn't a bad week. And it managed, I think, what rank am I? I'm about 190K at the moment. So I would have taken that at the start of the season after three game weeks. It's there's a lot. I wouldn't be worried about ranks at this stage of the season. There's a lot of fluctuation. There's not many points in it. But I'd rather be higher than lower. So I'm okay with that. So...
Yeah, I mean, I always say if in the first sort of 6 game weeks you can be even in the top million, I think that's fine. I mean, I think and a good start is to be in the top maybe 200-300k, which well, you know, we can happily say we both are, so fairly happy with that so far. You've obviously mentioned Areola coming into your team, so I'll put your bus team on the screen now. And Udogie finally comes in for his, which a lot of people are doing that this week, because you're not the only one who you know, you left him on the bench. It is your destiny to start him this week.
Nicely done. Yeah, I mean, I always kind of, before the season started, I had, I think, the first 8 game weeks mapped out with defender rotations, and I didn't go, there's no point in going beyond that, I don't think, but I had 8 game weeks, and game week 4 was always that week when I didn't really want to be playing a Stupinan. I think you can, but ideally I don't. Same goes with my Arsenal defender. So I always wanted to pick defenders to complement them who had those good fixtures in game week 4, and Mark Gahey is one of those at home against Wolves. Destiny Udogie, I think, having watched the Burnley Villa game at the weekend, I feel a little bit more confident in that. I was a bit unsure about Spurs and the defence and how many clean sheets they're actually going to keep with the new manager going in, a bit more front foot, more attacking. But they've actually pleasantly surprised me over the past couple of weeks. They've looked pretty organised. And so, yeah, I'm happy to play him this week. And, yeah, the defence looks okay. And that leaves me with a choice of, well, maybe I don't need to do a Stupinan this week. Maybe I can wait till game week 5 and move him to a Newcastle defender then, take advantage of that good run. Or I could move a Stupinan to a City defender this week, but then that would make me benching Udogie, and I don't know if I want to do that. So I shall probably leave that as it is, I think, the defence and the goalkeeper.
Yeah, it certainly looks nice. Udogie's sort of on my shopping list as well. In the interest of saving time, what I am going to do is I'm not going to bother with my team, how it got on so far, and what my bus team is, because I've actually already recorded a team reveal video specifically about my team. So in the interest of people actually bothering to watch that one and not having them then find out it twice, I'm going to leave mine for now and spend that time instead on helping you guys out, because we've had some good questions come in. Put some of these to Tom, and I'll give some thoughts as well. So the first one is from Sander Flanagan, who says, what to do with Richarlison?
Well, he's massively underwhelmed, hasn't he? I thought he was a good pick at the start of the season, but it just hasn't happened for him so far, has it? It's hard to take him out, though, right now, because he's starting matches and he's got Burnley and Sheffield United, but I just think Madison's looks so good. If you haven't got other fires to put out, I'd be tempted with I think a switch to him. But it's certainly not urgent. I wouldn't mind playing Richarlison in the next 2 game weeks, but I can imagine he's been pretty frustrating to own. what would you do? What would you do, David? Would you keep him? Would you sell him?
I think I'd make that switch. I think there's one golden rule, in inverted commas, of FPL that I've never actually agreed with, which is the idea of, oh, I shouldn't do that, it's a sideways move. And I don't necessarily think that it's always a bad thing to do that, because we in FPL invest in players, not teams. And yes, Spurs have good fixtures, but clearly Madison is the one who is performing considerably better than Richarlison for sort of two reasons. Now, anyone who's watched any of our videos over the last couple of days will have seen how well Madison is performing statistically. He is miles ahead of Richarlison in terms of what he's producing on the pitch. He's also miles ahead of Richarlison for just general happiness. He is in a really good place of mind right now. If anybody's not seen that video of the Bournemouth fans kind of riling him up, talking about Southgate being right for not including him in England teams, and rather than rise to it, he just sort of, you know, sort of with a big cheeky smile on his face, mocks them with where he puts the ball down to take the corner. And in the end, it cuts through that moment, and these people who were abusing him 5 seconds ago are kind of laughing with him. It's a brilliant piece of sort of showmanship, which I'm guaranteed he learned that from Jamie Vardy, I'm almost certain. But the point is that he's in this, he just looks a completely different player, and so therefore having Richarlison doesn't necessarily get you any of that Madison energy. It doesn't get you, if Madison gets some goals, there's no guarantee Richarlison got the assist, to be honest. And so this whole idea of moving sideways, it doesn't have to be as stigmatized as I think as it has been in years gone by. And so personally myself, I would make that switch from Richarlison to Madison, because they're in completely different echelons of performance right now. So, but I can understand the concern, but
and then the team is so set, they're going to be so set up around Madison, isn't it? He's central to everything in that team. He's the main playmaker there, and I would be very, very surprised that over the next three, 4 game weeks, if that didn't move pay off, or that move didn't pay off. I don't think I'd be taking a hit or anything like that for it. But if you can do it and you haven't got other areas of your team which need more attention, then I think that would be a good move.
Yeah. So. We've got two questions that are going to talk about someone who recently was plying his trade in your part of the world, Tom, but has now moved north up to Yorkshire. Garrick says, can Tom recommend Archer as a striker option now that he's moved to Sheffield United? And then we had another question come in, this one from Michael, who says, Archer or Semenyo as my replacement for Mbama? So it's a niche question, of course, 4.5 million forward, but sometimes they're what prop our squads up, so it's important to get it right.
Yeah, I haven't seen loads of Archer because his impact, sorry, I haven't seen loads of him, I haven't seen loads of him at Villa Park because his impact has largely been in the League Cup and he hasn't done much in the Premier League at all. He hasn't been given many opportunities. But he obviously had a good summer with the England under 21s, did well on loan at Middlesbrough last year in the second half of the campaign. So I kind of had high hopes for him. But struggled a little bit in pre-season. Missed the penalty in the US, and then John Duran kind of came on in game week two and scored within like 50 seconds of coming on. And it felt like he just was slipping down the pecking order. So the move felt right for him. I think we've got a buyback clause as well, which we did with Ramsey, who's just gone to Burnley as well. Aaron Ramsey, that is. But yeah, I think at Sheffield United, I think it's a really good move for him. I think he's going to start in that team. We had a piece on site yesterday where we had, which Neil wrote, which was excellent, but we had FPL Blade contributing to as well. He thinks he's going to come in and play alongside McBurney in that kind of Heckingbottom's 3-5-2. And I think he's the best 4.5 to own. I think he'll get ahead of it. He'll get more opportunities than Semenyo. I think playing in that role with off McBurney, I suppose, and using his pace, he's good at dribbling with the ball as well. And I think your expectations aren't going to ever be too high with a 4.5, but I think he's the kind of player that you can sit on your bench, you'll get appearance points, you'll score the odd goal, and maybe even you can play him in certain fixtures. When they have a decent home match at Bramall Lane, which is probably in game week four with Everton. So I think he is playable in certain matches. Just don't expect too much. You know, he's not going to bang in a hat trick, but I think he might tick over there and he'll get the minutes. And he's got talent for sure.
Hmm. Yeah, he's definitely going to nip in with a few goals. And it might even be like over Christmas where he becomes most useful for you. But when you just end up with... That's when you inexplicably end up having to draw on, say, your third sub, for example, because of just a completely unpredictable chain of no-shows. So that's maybe when he's going to be perhaps the most useful. Choco says, would you rather sell Rashford or Martinelli in order to get Mbeumo, Maddison or Sterling? So I suppose the operational part of this question is which of those players to sell in that little comparison, Rashford or Martinelli and Bowman, Maddison and Sterling. We can make a secondary decision there, but I think the main thing here is which of those two is the most sellable.
I think Martinelli. It's not quite clicking for Arsenal at the moment, and you could say the same with United, but I think their fixtures over the next six are better than Arsenal's. And I would be tempted to shift Martinelli before Rashford. I do think that Rashford's going to come good. I think it's a matter of time before he scores. And Martinelli, we don't know what's going to happen at Arsenal. Maybe he'll be the next one to kind of have his minutes reduced in a certain match. So, Rashford feels a bit more nailed on for those longer amount of minutes. And I think, Ten Hag challenged Rashford to score, I think, 40 goals in pre-season or something. So he better start soon because he's running out of time. So, I think he'll be... I think I'd definitely sell Martinelli over Rashford.
Yeah. And, on the Mbeumo, Maddison, Sterling, if there's sort of interest which way to go there. Personally, I think that Maddison, again, is the more standout. Now, I have admittedly just talked about covering or sideways moves or whatever. Right now, both Mbeumo and Sterling are offering sideways moves that are actually viable. You know, we've talked about how Jackson arguably is in better statistical form than Sterling. And so therefore, if you want to cover Chelsea's fixtures, the fact that there is a guy who is performing who isn't Sterling and is a forward, you can do it. Exactly the same thing with Mbeumo and Vissa. Vissa has kind of, we haven't really talked about him much in the stream because I think people have either got him or they've got Mbeumo, so they're not really, you know, there's no decisions around Vissa. But the point is that Mbeumo, if you don't have him, you don't have room in your midfield, you can make room for Vissa up front. If you can't find room for Sterling, you can use Jackson up front because they are good enough right now. Whereas Spurs don't have a forward who can offer you what Maddison can. And so of those three, Maddison has to have that little advantage because if you want to get the in-form attacker at Spurs, it has to be a midfielder. Whereas if you want the in-form attacker at Brentford or Chelsea, it could be a forward if you needed it to be, which usually helps influence decisions for me anyway. I don't know what you think, Tom.
Yeah, I think that it's really interesting way of looking at it. Yeah, and Maddison is the main man at Spurs, isn't he? I do like Mbeumo because he's on penalties, and I think that really elevates an asset. They don't have to necessarily be playing well; they can just get that penny out of nowhere. And I still think I find it really hard to look behind him, given his price. What is it, 6.8 million now? Sterling Maddison is probably the biggest question of the week, isn't it? I don't think, you know, it's not straightforward. I think if you're looking at 4 or 5 weeks, then it's probably Sterling, because I think that Spurs' fixtures they've got a North London derby coming up, haven't they? And they've got Liverpool as well after that. I still think Spurs can go and score there, but maybe Chelsea's fixtures are better over that kind of period. Sterling's stats, he wasn't showing anything in game weeks 1 and 2, but anybody who watched that West Ham game when Sterling went there and Chelsea went there, you could tell that he was getting back to that kind of point where he's on it, and you could tell he was hungry and he was getting into the box a lot. He was putting some really good runs down that kind of channel. And you felt like he was getting back to getting that confidence back. He just generally looked a bit happier. And then that obviously translated into points on Friday. And I think he's a really good option. I haven't quite weighed up who I like the most yet at the moment between Sterling and Maddison. I think if I had to pick today, it would be Sterling just because of those fixtures over the next four. But I don't think you can go wrong with either, really. I think they're both very good picks, and I completely get what you were. I do agree with what you were saying, David, and the fact as well that Jackson and Wissa alternative options at those teams. When at Maddison, he's the main man, isn't he? There, you know, Kulusevski doesn't come close to him. Son is overpriced compared to him. Richarlison isn't doing it, so he's the one. If you want to tap into those Spurs fixtures, he's the one that you want to go for.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, but that's where I'm probably going to go. And I'm not going to rule out Sterling, but for now, I think it's going to be Maddison for me. We'll take one more question in just a second, but just a nice little shout out to Puckering Pickletoe, who says, Joe looking very young today. I'm guessing they mean me. So thank you. That's very kind. But I'm not that much younger than Joe. Don't worry. I have a babyish face. I'm like the Ole Gunnar Solskjaer of the fantasy football world. You'd probably be surprised at how old I actually am. But very kind of you to say. Thank you very much. And just a quick reminder, of course, Joe is just on holiday. Don't worry. There's not any nefarious scheme. Anytime I replace Joe on any video, and this happened a lot when I was here before, people kind of assume there was this... I just see funny comments on social media about there being this sort of like Da Vinci Code-esque kind of infiltration from the inside where David is attempting to steal Joe or Az's job. I can confirm that none of that is true. I say with a camera. Yeah, he will be back. I'm not going to do an impression of the Terminator, but imagine him saying that. Let's get some additional likes just to celebrate the fact that Joe is on holiday having a nice time off. I'm sure he'd like to see the like counter higher than usual just to celebrate the fact that he's getting some time away, much deserved and well earned. But as I said, one more question, which I think is a good one for this week, which has come from Mogambo, who says Salah. Keep or sell, which I appreciate is like actually quite a sizable question to ask as the last one, because in years gone by, it would shake the earth to even think about it. But we're in a different times now.
Yeah, I think Salah, he's never going to be a problem in a team because he's still ticking over this season without hit. A bit like Watkins, you know, what is it? 5 points, I think he's got so far. And it would have been a bit more if the penalty would have gone in, which he eventually converted, but if it would have gone in without the minus points. But I feel the same way as I did in game week one, that I think you're better off selling him. And I think just redistributing the funds. We see so many good mid-price midfielders at the moment. I don't think realistically you're going to captain Salah anytime soon, given Man City's fixtures and the fact that Haaland is there. I wouldn't captain him against Villa. I think the West Ham game, the next Anfield one after that, West Ham are playing pretty well at the moment. He then goes to Tottenham. And when at the same time, you've got City with home games like Fulham and Forest and things like that. So I just think, yeah, especially if you've got two free transfers and you can upgrade another player and maybe get two good mid-price players instead of Salah and a much cheaper one, that's what I would do. And I think the goals will be, we said it before in pre-season, the goals might be more spread around Liverpool this year with Gakpo moving into midfield, which he didn't do at the weekend, but he had been doing previously. You've got Jota there, you've got Diaz back as well. Now there's a lot of players who can score goals in that team, and they might not be as reliant on just Salah to get the goals. So yeah, I think if you sell and you reinvest, then the two players that you get will be stronger than Salah and a much cheaper one.
Yeah, it's all about sort of points per million spent in many ways. Because point made in the chat by, I think it's Michael Brook, who says Salah hasn't blanked yet, so why would you sell? I mean, I suppose, yeah, the answer to the question is what can you achieve with that money? And I think the best possible explanation of what you can sometimes do by selling that expensive player and spending that money, in my personal experience, was simply last season, where I started last season with up front Haaland, Kane and Jesus, which was doable last year. And I wanted to do that so that I could move away from those expensive forwards if I needed to. Now, Kane, very rarely disappointed. He gave me returns almost every single week, right? But going into the World Cup, I was ranked something like 800k, and I was on course for literally my worst ever season of all time. I made the decision when we had the unlimited transfers of like, look, I don't think Kane is a bad option, and he didn't have a bad World Cup. He didn't have an amazing one, and of course, the missed penalty cost us getting to the semi-final. But, you know, I didn't necessarily think Kane had lost his mojo in any way. I just looked at what I could do if I got rid of him and spread the cash. And from after the World Cup, I came out of it 800k and I finished the season at 10k or just outside the top 10k. But all while that was happening, Kane continued to deliver. And every week he was being talked about, like, why don't we just own Kane? Because he delivers all the time. And I was sat there not having him going, that's great. But 7 or 8 points every week in a way that's going to limit the rest of my team and what it can achieve. Actually, my ceiling is just much higher if I take that steady Eddie player getting me single point returns every week. I'm not captaining because Haaland is around, and spreading it around to more explosive players actually made a like humongous difference to my team. So it's very much that kind of ideology of, fine, he's not a bad player. Yes, maybe he's returning, but they are all just single digit returns so far. I'm not really seeing an explosive player yet. And so, I mean, that's why I sold him for Foden. So you have to think about what that money can do, as Tom said there. And I said, that's just a bit of personal experience from myself, where removing the reliable player who's expensive sometimes makes your team better, but you've got to spend the money right.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's so many good mid-price midfielders at the moment. If you can go out there and get Madison and a Sterling, or you can have a Fernandez who complements one of those for what you get for Salah and one other player would be much cheaper. I think those mid-price midfielders, there's such a lot of value in there that we can tap into that now. And yeah, I just don't think you're going to captain Salah that much in the immediate kind of, what, 4 or 5 game weeks. I'd be surprised if you captain him at all in that time. So I think you can sell him now.
Absolutely. Well, with that rather depressing fact, you know, that used to be on these Tuesdays, we're like, captain him or your team will be broken. But of course, yeah, as you say, it does seem like a Tom Selleck, but
I think there will be a time when he does become a factor again, and it might not be that far away. It might be in a few weeks' time. And if we think that he's got fixtures where you can captain him, or you can possibly go against Haaland when he has trickier matches, he will come back into the equation. He's a great player, nobody's doubting that. But just at this moment in time with these fixtures, bearing in mind how strong cities are, I just think you'll be better off spreading the money around the squad a bit.
Well, I mean, it's worth pointing out that in game week 9, which seems to be the wildcard time for a lot of people, Everton come to Anfield when Man City host Brighton, who you know, no pushover these days. And then in game week 10, away at Man United. We've been here before. That's a hard fixture for City. And then he scores a hat-trick, of course. But Liverpool do host Nottingham Forest that week. So there are going to be opportunities in the future.
Yeah.
I suppose another one, Sheffield United away for Liverpool in game week 15 when Villa are hosting Man City. So there are going to be times. times. They're just not yet. They're in the future. Keep Salah in the back of your mind for that wild card, almost certainly, is the way to go. Well, with that, Tom, I think it's time to round things off. Thank you, everybody, for joining us today and not being too put off by the fact that the creator himself of the Goals Imminent Table wasn't with us today. So thank you for being welcoming enough to let me join the Goals Imminent Party. It's been good fun. Actually, one question on, we need a video on the Game Week 9 fixture swings. We've already done one, actually. If you go and have a look at the video called When to Wildcard, I did that with Mark on Monday morning. We've kind of broken down the different points in time when those fixture swings happen. And Tom, there's probably, I'm going to guess, I should probably know this, there's probably some analysis of the same on the Funnest Football Scout, the website, if you prefer written content to video and audio.
Well, funnily enough, David, yeah, I did write one in pre-season, which has been just been updated. And I think if you go onto the website, it's in the featured box. It's quite prominent near the top, and it's just got best times to wildcard. It discusses a little bit about the first international break, doing it then if you need to do surgery. Game week 9 looks really nice. And then it just touches on a few other times further down the line with City's blank and things like that you might want to just consider as well. And so yeah, have a look at that and watch the video as well and get some different opinions on it. And I do like using a wild card to hit a fixture swing, rather than, hopefully my team won't be in a position this year where I have to use one, and I can do it to kind of change five or six players and really tap into a decent run of fixtures for a team, which maybe other people will only have maybe one asset from, and I can kind of load in with three and go all in. And that's what I ideally want to use it for. And maybe game week 9 is the time. So.
Yeah, absolutely. So keep an eye out for all that content. Hopefully it helps shape your team as well. Quick other reminder, of course, to like this video if you found it useful or if you enjoyed it. Subscribe to the Fantasy Football Scout YouTube channel as well and hit that bell notification so you don't miss any of the content. We've got all sorts of videos coming up this week. Burning Questions on a Wednesday this week, so you can catch that tomorrow. There's going to be General's Orders later today. My team reveals out tomorrow as well. We'll have Deadline Dilemmas with Rich and Hibbo again, whilst Praz is on his travels. And there'll be, of course, a Deadline stream on Friday. So loads of content to check out. Make sure you don't miss it. But with that, we shall leave you fine folks to enjoy the rest of your FPL tinkering, and we shall see you next time.